Hello and welcome to Who Are You? This is the Babylon 5 Watchcast, hosted by two former strangers, now friends, who've gotten to know each other while rewatching a favorite show from their childhood, Babylon 5. I'm Trafair.
And I'm Laura.
And today we're joined by...
Jeremy.
Hi, Jeremy.
I wanted to say that with gravitas.
Yeah, you only get one shot.
Yeah.
One opportunity, like we like to say in Detroit. So, to really introduce yourself to a crowd... Jeremy, this is fun for us because this is the first actual conversation we've had
that's
not over a text format. And you're someone that I have thanked literally over 100 times.
I know.
Yeah.
That's well, true. You don't realize, but when you do that on the podcast, when I'm listening, I'm saying, oh, you're welcome. But I don't think you can hear me.
I can't.
Yeah.
But I will every time I say it. Now.
Also, I did laugh when Laura pointed out that I never know my own URL and that she has to correct me when we're doing our own thing. Anyway.
Yeah.
Foreshadowing.
Well, why don't you talk about that a bit, Jeremy? In fact, why don't you tell us, who are you?
Who are you?
Who are you?
Do you know who I am?
So I am Jeremy Siegel. I am a multi-instrumental musician, got my degree in music performance, so of course I don't actually work in music, because that's how that works.
Yeah, same.
Yep. And yeah, you know, I know you guys and a lot of the people that we mutually know, including my wife, through a Star Trek podcast, and Next Generation was kind of like my first sci-fi thing that I really got into. Well, no, Star Wars, but
yeah, you know, both.
Yeah, you know, I'm just a guy, you know. He's just this guy, you know. That was a Hitchhiker's
Guide. Cool guy.
Yeah. But Laura and I actually have been working together on our own podcast, which is called Post Apocalypse Now, and it is, despite the title, it's actually about cake. No, it's about the
band.
Yes. Did you know that the band Cake, you can slice the members of the band up, they're made of cake.
Oh, wow.
Yep.
You know, I put on Is It Cake on Netflix once and was really disappointed.
Yeah, I know.
No music promise. From Cake.
Yeah, right?
That's a real missed opportunity right there.
Isn't it?
But yeah, anyway, that's kind of it. Laura and I have this cool podcast that's going to be coming out imminently. And we're going through the great pieces of media that fit into the post-apocalyptic genre. So it's been a lot of fun.
Yeah, so we're starting off with a classic post-apocalypse universe, one that we both had not had any exposure to before we started the podcast. And that would be everybody's favorite Australian post-apocalypse, Mad Max.
Crocodile Dundee. Oh, yeah, Mad Max. Yeah.
Yeah.
and of course we go into it a lot in our podcast, but I had seen, you know, bits of it as a kid and that was it. Like I didn't really remember much of it. And I really wanted to see the newer one that came out, Fury Road. I was very excited to see it, but the girl I was dating at the time was like, this looks stupid. And so I never got to see it. So
disappointing.
Yeah. So that'll be really fun to visit that. And the listeners get to join us. And in our first three episodes, we have a special guest on there. So it's like we're hitting the ground running.
Yeah.
It's fantastic.
Yeah. And it is a universe that takes us on quite a journey from start to finish. So
it really does. Yeah, it does.
It's exciting.
Yeah, those movies have a lot of moments where you're just like, is this actually what's happening right now?
There hasn't been a movie yet in the series where both of us haven't been absolutely surprised by plot, characters, all of it. It's all been out of left field completely.
How far are you guys in? Have you seen Tina Turner yet?
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
That's the last one we just recorded.
And, fantastic.
Yeah. And yes.
Iconic.
She is.
Very
absolutely.
Much.
Yes. We stand a post-apocalyptic queen.
I know. I'm looking forward to listening now that I have got a commute again. I've resumed my podcast listening. It's been several years since I've dedicated more than I need to listen to this specific episode kind of time to a podcast. So,
wow. I'm so excited for you. There's so much backlog for you to get through.
Yes, the aforementioned Star Trek podcast, I have almost listened to a season's worth in the last 3 weeks.
Wow.
So I've got a fair commute and it's daily. So
there you go.
That's great to hear, though. I'm glad things are going well over on Post Apocalypse Now.
Yeah.
Part of our little family of podcasts that we've been growing over here.
Yeah, it's so exciting. I can't wait till the next one gets announced.
Yes. Yeah, so that's all fun and dandy. We have an episode of Babylon 5 before us that is, I'd say, dystopian.
Yeah, oh, that's a good vibe for it. It's not normal, that's for sure.
It definitely tries to make something feel normal that shouldn't feel normal. And it does a very good job of making you feel like you need to take a shower because of that.
For real. And it starts with the creepy title.
Yep. We got season 5, episode 13, The Core is Mother, The Core is Father. Quick question for you both. I don't know if you Googled this. Did you notice that this is listed under an alternate title?
I didn't.
I saw this listed a couple of places as The Core is Father, The Core is Mother.
I did see that. Yes, and I was briefly confused.
Yeah.
That's not how it goes. Do you think that title was an actual JMS title, or is it something that the internet has just misread?
Oh, I'm guessing someone just put it in wrong.
Yeah.
Like, Babylon 5 is from that age of the internet before anything had to be sourced.
Yeah.
I mean, not that anyone cares about sourcing anything when they talk about it on the news these days anyways, but it's from a time where it can just reference other websites and it's just, oh, well, this was what it said, so it's correct.
All the official lore was written by your cousin Ricky, and it's like, oh, yeah. he wrote that on a blog post and it became official.
Someone just messed it up at some point and it ended up sticking, I'm sure.
Yeah. I mean, it's not unfitting because there's a hell of a lot of patriarchy in this episode, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's almost kind of like a Lower Decks type episode, right? Mm-hmm. Because we have these two main characters traveling with our recurrent guest character that are trainees.
Yes. Who we meet shortly. Did you catch who directed this episode?
I did not. Why don't you tell me?
It was Stephen Furst, Veer.
Oh, and he's good.
He is good. And this is his third episode of the show. And all of his episodes are like this. He also did The Illusion of Truth, which was one of the, not the big newscast episode, but was along those lines.
Yeah.
And then The Deconstruction of Falling Stars was also him, which is the season 4 finale that jumps us through time a bunch and doesn't really focus on our characters either.
Yeah. He likes to go after the support.
Yeah.
Wonder why.
So the interesting thing for me on this is that, spoiler alert, this is the first episode of Babylon 5 I've ever watched all the way through. And so when you guys are saying that this is such a different thing, this is all that I know. And so I'm curious to hear, as we go through this, how this is different from a typical episode. Because I, as far as I'm concerned, this is how all of the episodes are.
Yeah, this is such an interesting episode for you to be on, Jeremy. I'm so glad.
It's almost like we scheduled it on purpose.
Yeah, well, one of the major differences at first is we don't open up on Babylon 5. And it takes us 20 minutes to get there. Did you notice on the timestamp how long we were into the episode?
I did not, but it does take a bit.
Yeah, it was 20 minutes.
Yeah, I remember as it was going, you know, I almost had the Jurassic Park quote. Is there any Babylon 5 in this Babylon 5 episode?
Yeah. We got there eventually. I think we're opening up in Earthdome, perhaps, at Psycor headquarters.
Yeah, this is Psycor headquarters in Geneva.
Okay.
As we know from our book club adventures reading the Psycor books.
Mm-hmm.
and Bester walking the hallways. We see that they've invested a lot into Shepard Fairley's art, which is really cool. They've got that all over the walls. Probably expensive given its age at this point, given it's 200 years in the future.
Sure, yeah. A lot of interesting messages on this artwork.
Yeah.
We open up with first a nice just obey sign.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like Psycor is just really taking the subtext and making it text, right?
Yeah.
Like, do normal people do this? Like, I don't know. I don't know enough about fascist empires. Hopefully that will, like, stay that way. but do you really put up signs that just say obey? Maybe. I don't know.
Keep calm and carry on.
Oh.
You know, there's a long history of very short and to the point propaganda.
Yeah.
Not necessarily fascist.
Yeah. I would say keep calm and carry on is a little, if its message has some of that patriarchy in it, it's a little more subtle, right? It's a little less overt as the word obey.
Yeah, for sure. This is all, of course, allusion back to things like They Live, an all-time classic in my book. If you haven't watched They Live, it's worth it for the fight scene alone.
I see. Yeah, I'm not familiar with this one.
So this is John Carpenter
okay.
In the 80s, his time. And he casts Rowdy Roddy Piper of WWF fame to be a homeless contractor, general construction kind of guy who stumbles upon the reality that humanity is not under alien invasion, but has already been subjugated by aliens.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And nobody takes him seriously. He gets these glasses that let him see through subliminal messaging that is just everywhere.
Whoa.
And that's where these, like,
the obey.
White and black obey yeah. signs are most prominent.
I knew it looked familiar.
Yeah. Which then artist Shepard Fairey, as the joke I made earlier, took a lot of inspiration from. And he's the guy who has that Obey clothing line,
oh,
if you've ever
okay.
seen that.
Yes.
I have
and
not.
Then he also did the artwork for the Obama presidential campaign, but instead of putting Obey, he put Hope.
Okay.
Yeah.
I was not familiar with the Obey stuff at all.
Watch They Live. It's really, it's fun, it's absurd, and it's terrible in a lot of ways, but I love it.
We do love a little terrible around here. Yeah, so Bester just got back from Mardi Gras. He had a runaway in New Orleans. Very convenient for this time of year, right?
Yeah, we get introduced to the two interns, Achen Hikaru. Did you clock that last name?
Oh, I did.
That's not an accident.
Uh-huh. I didn't catch that one.
Yeah. Obviously, Bester is Walter Koenig, who played Chekhov in Star Trek. So his buddy was Hikaru Sulu.
Yeah.
Fun little twist. Yeah. I appreciate.
Yeah. And then we have Lauren. Is that the name of the other intern? Yeah.
Did you clock her, by the way?
I did not. Tell me about her.
I did.
Yeah.
She was the original Audrey from National Lampoon. And I instantly when I saw her, I was like, oh, she looks so familiar. And I had to Google it. I was like, oh, that's Audrey. Wow. That's crazy.
Yeah. Neat.
Yep. And these two are interns that are getting paired up with Bester for some job shadowing. They are your typical kiss asses.
Is that what was going on? I wasn't entirely sure. It seemed like the whole episode was him giving them a tour, kind of. And
yeah.
I must have missed like the beginning. I was confused by his lack of Russian accent for a good like 10 minutes. I was like, why isn't he saying nuclear vessels?
Yeah. Yeah. The first time I saw Walter Koenig at a convention, I was just like, man, all I can hear is Bester. Like, because he's not using the accent. I'm like, yeah, it's Bester up there.
Yeah. The Bester voice is definitely his normal speaking voice from seeing him at conventions and being around that one time he got lost and asked Beth for directions.
Oh, yes.
So these two are going to hang around with Bester for a bit, but we cut over into one of the dorm rooms here at Psycor U, and there's done a murder to theme, which is classic Babylon 5, Jeremy. This is a cold open. We get probably 40 times over 5 seasons.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Murder to open, cold open.
Yeah. If we're not murdering, we're plotting a murder or an assassination. That's usually it, yeah, right?
We
yeah.
get one of those two a lot. Yeah.
So this fella, what does the murder is he's not a regular?
No.
No.
Okay. Because I'm sure he's a very nice fellow. His acting was something to behold. And I will just say that.
Yeah. There are only three. Well, there's two of our regular cast members, I think, in this episode.
Yeah.
We see Dr. Franklin in MedLab when we're on Babylon 5 as a regular. And then Zach Allen, who's Kinnicky from Grease, is a regular in the show at this point as well. I don't think we see any other regulars. The only other character we've even ever seen before is Bester.
Yeah.
What about the guy in the, when Bester walks in to meet the two interns, the guy that looks exactly like Stacy Keach but isn't? Is he not a, and also it took me like 20 minutes to realize that wasn't Stacy Keach. Okay, so he's, gotcha.
Yeah, I think in Book Club he might have been mentioned because he seems like he's a director type and you hear about Bester's bosses sometimes. So maybe we've gotten this character mentioned, but we have never seen this character for sure.
Okay.
After we go to theme here, our theme is slightly altered.
Oh, I didn't even notice.
Yeah, instead of the Babylon 5 logo, we get a PsyCore logo saying trust the core.
Yeah, I noticed that and I didn't know that was different, but it seemed odd.
Yeah, I feel normally we get the Babylon 5 sword and shield there.
I am just failing you today, Jafari. You keep asking things and I'm like, nope. I know why I missed that one, though, because I was making notes during the theme.
That is our job here.
Yeah, definitely was trying to catch up and missed the gag.
I was also taking notes. So when there's like several voiceovers going on talking about things during the opening.
Yes.
I understood none of it. But who is Lorian?
Okay, so the Babylon 5 is a show. Takes place over a year each season. Each season is a calendar year, January to December.
Oh, okay.
And so when they flash the years, what they're doing is they're actually taking us through the seasons of the show.
Okay.
And so there were the four flashes that was seasons 1 through 4. And all of those quotes were things that were moments of importance in the previous seasons.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I actually really love that, but the music behind it's not my favorite.
It is the weakest of the five theme songs. They get a new theme song every year for Babylon 5.
When Lorian's thing came up, I could have sworn it was Phil Hartman, but
no,
it wasn't.
I wish.
Whatever he said, I was like, Troy McClure? But no, it wasn't, I guess.
Man, that'd be so good, though.
Wouldn't it?
So good.
I mean, it would have been, he would have been in movies when this was made.
Yeah,
he would have been a little bit bigger than the show probably would have allowed. But yeah, Lorian is a character in seasons 3 and very briefly 4.
Gotcha. Right. Okay. I apologize if I divert you guys too much.
Totally fine. Diversion's welcome on this podcast.
Yeah, you can edit out literally everything I say. You can also assemble it together to make it sound like I'm saying things that I'm not. Like, that's fine. Yeah. Okay.
We go long sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
In fact, I've gotten comments along the lines of, I wish your show was longer.
Okay. So, Yeah, I have to. I'll agree with that. Like I said, I've listened to, I don't know, maybe a dozen episodes, and it's always good. And yeah, you guys always finish, and I'm like, yeah, that was. I'm a fan of a nice, succinct podcast. You guys never leave me where I'm like, oh, okay, you've gone too long. It's always like, yeah, perfect.
Yeah, so very nice. Thank you.
Yeah,
we're in a tight ship here on Who Are You.
Yeah. Post-Apocalypse Now is a minimum 3-hour episode, so just there's a little different.
So it's just me. Is that the difference?
You're just very efficient, Jafar.
I summarized Army of Darkness in like 16 minutes.
No, you did, and
a couple episodes ago.
No, and Ben even like called you out. He's like, I've never heard anyone summarize something so quickly and perfectly. And I agree. Like, you really like. Bam. It was really good.
So, thank you.
Yeah.
Anyways, so at the end of the credits, there's another change here, which means I've got to go get my tramp stamp altered, unfortunately.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
I missed this change, too. What are we changing your tramp stamp to?
So originally, my lower back tattoo was created by J. Michael Straczynski, as you all know. Mm-hmm. And in this, it's the Babylon 5 shield, and then the Joe's credit is just placed underneath it like it's a normal credit any other part of the show. Mm. So I've got to go get a cover up and get the sword and shield
back there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Just so that I can change it again next episode.
Sure, yeah.
This seems efficient.
My tattoo artist is very excited about this prospect, mostly from the payday.
Can I ask, so J. Michael Straczynski, I almost said Straczynski.
Straczynski. Not Straczynski.
Yeah. No, he didn't do Rite of Spring.
No.
So how familiar are you both with like his other things? I know you've talked a little bit about
pretty
it.
Familiar.
Yeah,
Jaffer, I would say, is pretty familiar. I haven't seen as much, I think, of the other stuff.
What's
I would
like
call
his,
myself
like,
a novice.
What's the thing? I mean, is it Babylon 5? Or like, what's the thing? Okay.
The other stuff you might know, he did Sense8 with the Wachowskis.
Okay, I didn't see it, but I wanted to. Yeah, I know he did a really good run of Amazing Spider-Man in the 2000s.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
I have a lot of those issues. And that was like, that's the main thing I know him from, actually.
Yeah, no, he's doing comics again right now. I don't have them next to me because I just moved them in my long box because I wrote it, but I do keep my comic pile right here.
Nice.
But he's currently writing Captain America.
Okay.
And he's 8 issues in, I want to say, 7-8 issues in, and it's been fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Okay.
Very much worth your time.
Huh.
He just put out a novel called The Glass Box, which I have not read. Because I'm super behind on my read list, but it is sitting on my nightstand for the next book that I grab.
Nice.
He has an autobiography called Becoming Superman, which is an interesting insight into him and his works. And then was that Spider-Man run. I'd say that's all the big stuff.
Those are the big things? Okay.
He was the lead writer, I believe, on 80s She-Ra, credited with creating that character, and wrote for He-Man.
Mm-hmm.
Back in the day, wrote for Murder, She Wrote for a while. One other show in the
Pretty
80s.
Big in the 80s.
Yeah.
For sure.
Okay.
Still producing Babylon 5, in case you hadn't heard about The Road Home. That was
we got a new movie last year.
Yeah.
That's cool.
But yeah, that's Joe. So after theme, Bester takes the interns around, and they see two telepaths playing that game from Next Gen with the Frisbees and the Sandworms. That makes you orgasm.
Suck disc.
Suck disc, yeah.
You gotta be careful how you say that.
Real talk, though. Did you notice how Vorlani the defense was and how shadowy the attack was?
Oh, I did catch that. I also felt like maybe this is one of those things that could have been improved in today's CGI if we ever get our reboot.
Yeah.
Are you talking about where the two are sitting there and one of them's attacking the other with tentacle porn? Is that what?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay.
That would be the shadow attack.
Yeah.
Right. Right.
They are the bad guys, air quotes, for 2 seasons of this show, 3 seasons of this show, whatever. We see some re-education propaganda as well. Before Bester gets pulled away, he brings the interns with him. And then we go back to the dorm room murder.
Yeah.
And look, they're pretty quickly like, oh, it was his roommate who murdered him. And I thought this might be a fun opportunity to get to know each other a little better.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Well, I mean, we've all had roommates, I assume, Jeremy.
Yes, I have pushed many of those memories down, deep down, but yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I thought it might be fun to share some stories here without naming names, if at all possible. Any stories you're comfortable sharing, don't feel like you gotta say anything on radio that you would be upset if someone else heard. But, you know, like, I had a college roommate who once put on Juvenile slow motion on repeat, just the one song on loop for 4 hours. You
Juvenile?
Know? And I didn't kill him. So.
What is that? That's a song?
Yes.
Okay. Who is that? I don't know pop music, like, at all.
Juvenile is most famous for his hit Back That Ass Up with dollar signs instead of S's.
I appreciate you pronouncing the dollar signs. I'm a big fan of that. That's great. That's great. Okay.
Yeah. What is the context? Why would you do that?
This was in my college dorms.
Uh-huh.
And we had 2 rooms for 4 people. We had a bedroom and a shared living space, and that was it.
Okay.
Well, and a little attached bathroom. And he was enjoying some company of his preferred sexual preference.
Sure.
And had just kind of put it on to set the mood, I think, and not realized that it was...
He's got a loop.
On loop. And they had fun, and then they fell asleep and forgot that the song was playing.
Wow.
And I'm sitting out there with my roommate through most of college was one of my best friends from high school. And I remember we pulled out the guitars and we learned how to play along with it at one point. I remember playing Metal Gear Solid 3 while it was going and
oh my God.
Trying to make it work with the background music and stuff. Yeah.
I just can't.
So eventually we just got done with it and said, we've waited long enough. There's no way you are still possibly enjoying each other's company in any kind of way where we would be interrupting meaningfully. This needs to end.
I can't imagine being one of the people who are enjoying the other person and not going insane. Hearing the same song over and over. I could not possibly, I would stop the partner and I would be like, hey, we got to fix that. I'm going to die.
Right.
I'm going to die.
Everyone had their minds on other things at the time.
Yeah.
I mean, good for them for being able to like compartmentalize like that.
Well, look, yeah. I mean, like if you're enjoying the other person's company, as we're referring to it, you know, that's what, like 15 seconds. And then like, yeah. And then you're asleep. And so then, you know what? And then you don't notice it's going, right?
15 seconds, then instantly asleep.
If you have some Gatorade, maybe 20 seconds, and then like you're, okay. You know.
Yeah. No, this checks out. Yeah.
Man, I am dying now, guys.
This highbrow level of humor you can count on Post-Apocalypse
I'm
Now.
Loving us because we're like 5 minutes into the episode and like 36 oh, yes. minutes into our conversation.
I'm sorry.
You can we're friends. I love it.
Yeah, that's fine. So anyone else got some fun stories from terrible roommates that they didn't kill? Or alternatively, roommates that you did?
I think that I am probably the terrible roommate and I'm grateful that no one murdered me.
If you don't have any bad roommate stories, it's because you're the bad roommate.
Right.
That's the logic we're going on here.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure it was me. So thanks to everybody who's put up with me, especially Aaron, who is stuck with me currently.
So I have remade friends with the people that I at some point lived with, and I want to continue to be friends with all those people. So no, I'm not going to go into any stories.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't want you to put
it's a great question, and if I had something that would work, I would definitely answer.
I think that none of your experiences could have been terrible then if you are still friends with those people, so congrats on that.
Well, almost all of those were ruined because of my ex, and so I'm no longer with her, but those are also the stories that would be worthy of telling because objectively they're funny. But also, we can leave.
I'm asking for a joke, not for you to relive trauma. We're good. We can move on.
Yeah.
I mean, like, I love reliving trauma, but as long as it's my own, you know, for comedic purposes.
Speaking of reliving trauma, nobody's going to be doing that at the end of this episode. It's going to be fine. Totally. Yep.
When I thought that they were giving a tour, you know, I thought these two were there for a tour, and I was like, oh, let's just show a dead body to this tour group. I was a little confused by that, but your explanation makes more sense.
They're touring to be cops, he's just going to bring them along on this investigation and see how they do. And we get a weird scene.
Oh,
so weird.
I have to talk about this.
Yes, we've got to talk about this.
Not about the scene, which is terrible in and of itself, but did you see the art on Bester's walls?
Okay, I missed the art on Bester's walls. I can't wait.
He's got paintings of Tetris blocks up on the wall.
Hey, that's not bad, but it
is. God, I think I did see those and they just fit in with my idea of what should be on a wall. And so I didn't think anything of it. That's great.
It's like two picture paintings of Tetris blocks and then that weird lamp sculpture that is maybe supposed to be a dog. This apartment screams serial killer to me. I don't know.
Yeah. these apartments are all weird, I'm sure.
Is this a building, these apartments, is this not a place that we see often in the show?
Never. Never okay. before and never again.
Okay.
Uh-huh. And maybe never again.
I was going to ask the question, when they show the exterior of it, it looks like Star Fox 64 level graphic fidelity.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, couldn't they get like miniatures or models for the buildings? But I guess not.
So Babylon 5 is one of the first shows to really push the CGI boundary.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it shows because it was at the verge of being acceptable.
Mm-hmm.
And arguably isn't.
Yeah.
Wasn't by the standards of the day and still isn't.
Yeah.
So that's, you're hitting on the reason why I didn't watch it. And I know a lot of people have that same reason. When I was in middle school, a good friend of mine, Ryan, was like, hey man, you love TNG. You should watch Babylon 5. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay. And I watched 10 minutes of an episode and the graphical fidelity was so bad that I was like, I actually can't pay attention to what these people are saying because I'm just focusing on the really terrible effects. So
I'm going to pull up my soapbox for a
second. Yes, please.
Oh, no.
Please do.
You're not wrong. 100%. And it's even worse in the first season.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's what I saw was the first season.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The CGI sucks.
Yeah.
Just there's no way around it. Even for the time, it wasn't particularly great. It was acceptable, and they were making TV, not movies.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah.
Sure.
Well, yeah. And just like, not to just interject quickly, like Odo on DS9 also wasn't great.
Yeah.
CG. Yes. Mm-hmm. So it's like, it wasn't just them, but it was certainly, it was a thing.
It was a thing at the time.
Yeah.
It is a testament to how good the writing is on this show that we're still talking about this show 30 years later.
Yeah, sure. That's what literally everyone who loves it, that's what they say. And so,
you will get used to it. It will stop bothering you. Mm-hmm. I remember, so the circumstances of like me and this show and watching it with regards to the start of this podcast was 2.5 years ago when we started this podcast. Wow. Sorry. I was watching this show from the start to finish again for the first time in a number of years.
Yeah.
And I felt the same way. I was just like, oh God, this is just difficult to watch. It's so bad. The CGI, it's even worse than I remembered. Right. And especially those early seasons, it gets better. And by the time you're in season 3, you've forgotten.
Sure. Yeah.
And I'm not asking you to like sit through 2 seasons of terrible television there either. There are some fantastic episodes in the first season. In the first 10 episodes, there are 3 fantastic episodes just offhand. And then other ones are pretty good.
Okay.
But I remember really disliking the first season, both on my initial watch and on my watch through that I started in 2021. But coming to it now and with Who Are You?
Yeah.
And part of it is taking notes and applying that more critical eye to a show than casually watching it, enjoying it.
Yeah.
But the other is I had already spent the time to kind of get adapted and ready for the CGI beforehand so that it wasn't bothering me when I started watching
of
the
show. Of course, yeah.
Again. And that really made the first season of the show so much better for me. So my suggestion to you is to just like throw Reboot on. Just like watch half a season of Reboot and then watch Babylon 5 and you'll probably be fine.
Okay.
Acclimate a little first.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Yeah, get your sea legs for terrible CGI and then go forward.
For
get some Lawnmower Man. Watch some of that for a bit. And then,
maybe some Max Headroom, you know.
Yeah. Oh, man. Hey, I will not abide Max Headroom, bad mouthing of Max Headroom.
No.
He was and is an icon. So.
Yeah, for sure. It's a great show.
Yeah. So...
Anyways, let's talk about the really awkward sexual proposal that happens in this next scene because, God, was this painful. I've deferred enough.
Yeah.
I can defer no longer. We have to get...
Do we have to?
We have to get through this scene so that we can get on with the rest of the episode.
Oh, man.
Laura, our young intern, our Griswold, comes to Bester's office looking to be consoled.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah, I'm air quotings consoled here. Yeah. It's like out of camera, so let me move up my hands a bit.
Yeah, yeah.
Be consoled. It's so skeezy. Like, you know,
it's super gross. And she's like, you probably looked it up. The age difference between them.
I wondered about it. I didn't Google it. Did you?
30 years. So 30-year difference.
Yeah.
Is that all?
Well, I thought that was a lot. But, you know, yeah.
Because Bester is in his, like, 60s, right? Like, in the show, he's older than we think he's. He's older than Walter Koenig is.
Right. He's supposed to be, like, in his 80s or something in the show. Did we figure that out? Yeah. We're assuming humans longer lives longer on humans, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
And then the intern is, like, I would assume, because we know from the Psycor novels that you, like, go to your specialization training at, like, 17.
Mm-hmm.
So she's interning before that.
Yeah.
He's 80 and she's, like, 16 in story.
Yeah.
Either way,
I assume you're talking about the actors' ages at this point, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Either way, it's gross. And I think you're right. They're in their teens, because when Chen goes to buy a drink from oversharing bartender later on, he's like, I'm not going to give you anything because you're a kid.
Yeah, so, was not sure at first if it was, I'm not going to serve you because you're Psycor, but it didn't look like he was in stuff. I think it was age.
That's what it implied to me anyway.
Yeah.
Pretty gross. Yeah. Really gross.
It's
really disgusting.
So gross.
Yeah.
He's like, at least he turns her down, but like, yikes, dude, maybe don't just answer the door for emotionally compromised interns. Like, maybe know that's a bad idea from the start.
Door open. Don't close your door if they come in your office. Yeah.
Yeah, I have to wonder at why that seemed to have no bearing on the plot of the episode at all. Why did they feel they needed to go there?
So Bester internally in the Psycor is kind of, he's famous.
Yeah, I got the hero worship part of it, sure.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and we see that there's a propaganda film a little bit into the episode here.
Mm-hmm.
He is in some of these propaganda films.
Okay.
Like, they have, people in the Psycor are brainwashed to love the core, and he is one of the faces of the core. And so it's easy to take a step back from all of this and go, this is emotional manipulation that the agency has conducted on this child since they were 10.
Yeah.
And he is just trying to get it out of the apartment as soon as possible. That is a read of this scene. It does not make this scene better in any way. I don't think this needed to be here. I think if the show were remade today, it wouldn't be here.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
The purpose of this scene is for Bester to make a joke when his boss walks in at the end of it.
Yeah.
And maybe to just show how brainwashed these kids are already.
Yeah.
Better ways to do that, though.
I think it's saying more things, too, about we're in this world where the core knows what's best. We say it. The core is mother. The core is father. But I think for a lot of the audience, the like hierarchy order system is we defer to the father. And this girl throwing herself at Bester, I think, is also saying things about, you know, the core is this family and it's so messed up. We've got incest in here. You know, we're breeding it. Even though Bester refuses it, like there's that subtext there of how wrong the Psycor is.
Bester's boss shows up at the end with a lead. And I got to say, the pain on Walter Koenig's face when he finds out he's going back to Babylon 5, the pain in his eyes, that was priceless.
Yeah. Yeah. He's now as sick of Babylon 5 as Babylon 5 is of him.
Yeah. I will say, you know, not having been familiar with his character and also having seen Walter Koenig in other things, I was a little surprised at how not emotive he is in the episode. And I don't know if that's because of like the Psycor, or they just like, you know, automatons, but like this was, he did have a level of disgust in his eyes when they said, you got to go back. I was like, oh, he doesn't like that. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that even for the PsyCorps is this rigid hierarchy sort of system, and we're hiding ourselves from the mundanes, like turning ourselves off. I think even for that system, Bester is the extreme.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, he is a villain in this show.
Oh.
And I don't even mean like kind of could be interpreted as one. Like, he straight up brainwashes a character, one of our main characters, into betraying his best friend at one point. Like, while, like, holding him mentally hostage while he kills all of the people that his ex-fiance are like, surrounded by and everything. Like, it is terrible. He does some evil shit in this show.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So is PsyCorps a bad... Are they baddies?
I mean, yeah, they've got the skulls on their cap, and they're not asking themselves that question, but yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, because it's so interesting to watch this episode without having any context, and I thought these were the good guys. And
yeah,
because
you're following
confused.
Bester. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, like he seems to be the main character. And I thought maybe with some of the, you know, more, I don't know, villainous things that they seem to hint at, I was like, well, you know, Captain Sisko is a good guy, even though he, you know, did a genocide. So like maybe we're going along that. But no, these are literally the bad guys, huh?
Yeah. Well, yeah. I think the show has tried a little bit in the show and more in our book club to humanize Bester and make him a little bit more sympathetic and not just a total caricature of a villain. Yeah. But he's done some really bad stuff, y'all.
Okay. Boy, that explains so much. All right. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
So we find out the rogue telepath's name is Jonathan Harris. And in an episode with someone named Hikaru, you might think that this is an homage to the actor who played Dr. Smith in Lost in Space. Given that Bill Mumy is on this show, we didn't see him this episode, but Will Robinson's on this show, and we've seen other actors from Lost in Space show up.
Yeah.
It's kind of a thing that's been referenced a number of times throughout the show. That is not the case. That is mere coincidence, because Jonathan Harris is named for someone very specific.
And who would that be?
The winner of a fan get your name in the show contest.
That's wonderful.
Nice. This is a thing we should bring back, right?
Right.
Yes.
The last character we had who won one of these contests was Dr. Lillian Hobbs, which is who subs in for Dr. Franklin for a bit, and is a very competent, caring character who's in multiple episodes and is just all around fantastic.
Yeah.
Like, there's a version of the show where Franklin leaves earlier and we get Dr. Hobbs for half of a season that doesn't exist but could, compared to this guy.
Yeah. Wow. I agree, Laura. I wish there was more of that, the contest to get your, you know, like the touch Paul Bellini kind of thing from Kids in the Hall. Like, there needs to be more, like, audience, you get to win some kind of role in the show. Those were always great.
Mm-hmm. Win a walk-on as an alien, man. Those were the best contests back
then.
PsyCorps talks some rightfully earned shit about station security.
Yeah. I love that our cops that we hassle on all the time are all ACAB if it's the PsyCorps. Because Zach is not into these PsyCops, but doesn't recognize some of these same things about himself.
Zach's a bootlicker.
Mm-hmm. That's Mr. Allen? That's Zach Allen? Okay.
Zach Allen.
Yeah, I did want to say that he seems to have romantic feelings for Bester. He's doing a lot of flirting, like Odo and Quark flirting. Like, there's a couple times he's like, he winks at him literally at one point. There's a lot of things going on there subtextually.
Before we get to that real quick, Bester leaves the station, there's this really cool shot with him in the mirror trying to like assume the mind of the person he's going to be hunting down. I really liked this shot. The like single cam pan over the shoulder, pan back with the different actor in the mirror.
Yeah.
Really well done.
It was really artful. Oh, the other thing that we got before we got to the station is we find out that PsyCorps has a mothership.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're hiding motherships in hyperspace. Yeah.
I don't think that's been mentioned on show at this point.
No, I don't think it has.
Yeah.
That's from book club, though.
I found that to be a very interesting concept, the idea that that ships are just staying in hyperspace. Mm-hmm. Like, that's kind of cool. That's a cool sci-fi concept.
It is uncommon in the setting. Hyperspace is actually a like separate dimensional reality where the rules of physics are different, and that's how they travel faster than light. And it is very easy to get lost because there are no anything. There's no physical anything besides the ships that we've put into hyperspace.
Yeah. Huh, so we have to use this gate system, and you have to know where your gate is and your next gate is, and
And they move, and hyperspace changes. The amount of time it takes to get to a place through hyperspace is a variable throughout the show.
Wow. That's cool.
Existing in this space is weird.
It's possible, but it's unusual. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
We've seen ambushes and stuff where there'll be like a fleet of ships waiting in hyperspace right outside of an area, but nothing like ships just hanging out there
That's
the entire
cool.
time.
That's really cool.
Our psychic goes down to the casino. He plays some cards and he gets jumped on his way out. There's a bunch of cardboard boxes that are just labeled Babylon 5 cargo that are all empty. Thought that was fun.
Yeah, we always label cargo with just its destination, right? And not with what it is. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Everything I get from Amazon says Earth on it.
So. Right, right.
It's technically the correct destination.
Right.
Might not be specific enough, but it is correct.
Technically correct is the best kind of correct.
100%.
Always, yeah.
Bester gives some money to Adrazi to find what they think is this guy's room. He calls Zach as a formality, but Chen isn't content with waiting. He busts out his old panty rating kit because we needed a reason to hate him. So it was so nice of the show to give us a reason to hate this villain.
Right.
Because we didn't have one besides him being naive until this point.
Right. He's not as sympathetic anymore.
He wants to ignore Bester's orders and take down this P-10 himself. But when they open the doors, there isn't a mind shredder, but rather a body. Zach quotes lesson number 3 of Garibaldi's homeschool security school. Never let facts get in the way of a good grudge.
Yeah. I noticed that too.
So anytime I hear Garibaldi's name, I think of David Garibaldi, the great drummer for Tower of Power. And so whenever I've been listening to you guys talking about the podcast, just know that I'm picturing a great funk band from Oakland being involved with the space station. Okay.
That's would such be, a better Garibaldi.
Yeah, it would be so much better than Alfredo. Yeah.
okay.
Still a better Garibaldi.
You need to have a list of what are better Garibaldis than the Garibaldi in Babylon 5.
So yeah, they find this body. I have to wonder here. So Bester's all like, well, he told me it was this room, but he thought it was this other room. So we're going to go there because he was lying to me. But it is the wrong room. Like the room the guy thought of is the wrong room. Did that guy not lie to Bester and he just assumed and just went for it?
There seemed to be a couple times where Bester was making some assumption. Like when he, I don't know if this was later, but when he's talking to the doctor and he's like, well, clearly it must be a P-12. And he's like, no, it can't be. And it's like,
he is purposely lying. Yes.
Yeah.
Was he lying there?
Yeah, we'll explain that. We'll get there.
Okay.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
The thing that got me here was like, you know, we're talking about the dead body. Lauren says that she's confused why he would be good at cheating because he's never been around gambling. So how would he know what to do? But the people you're around know what to do.
that was a very confusing sentiment to try to get across. I didn't buy that at all.
I think this is some propaganda here.
Okay.
So telepaths are not allowed to gamble due to unfair advantage.
Right.
And so because of that, I think they're instructed to just be dumb around. It's like, have you seen Kung Pao?
Oh man, a long time ago. Yeah, a long time ago.
This is Wimp Lo, we have trained him wrong as a joke. I feel like that's gambling in the Psi-Corps.
Okay.
She's too young and naive to understand how ridiculous the concept of them not knowing gambling just because they're told not to. Like,
yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Gotcha.
I'd
right.
buy that.
Like, they're like, this is craps. You always want to roll snake eyes. right. This is poker. You want to collect as many different cards as possible in right, random right. combinations.
Blackjack, you want to get to 30. Yeah.
Sure. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Okay. Gotcha.
Stuff like that.
Okay.
So Franklin gets the other murder in Med Lab. Did you see what he was wearing here? He must have been pulled from the B5 Ren Faire because he's in a wrap tunic and kung fu pants. It Wonderful. Is not his normal smock, or if it is, it's zoomed out at a level where we don't get to see it normally, and we've only ever seen the shoulders, because I have never once clocked that this thing is like down to knee length and he is wearing very baggy pants underneath.
And he has those curled up shoes with like little bells on them.
It's just like, why would you wear super loose clothing in a surgical bay?
Exactly, like, what I was going to say. Famously, we love to wear things that dangle as we are doing surgery.
Yeah.
Interesting choice. Well, it was just an autopsy, guys. We don't need the right stuff for that.
Yeah, if he drops a pen in the body, it's not that big of a deal.
Sure, yeah, yeah.
Damage is already done.
Yeah. Oh, a junior mint fell in there. Oh, well.
It's still good. 5-second rule. Franklin proposes that this guy has had his brain exploded by Psycops.
Uh-huh.
And Bester's just all like, nah, you'd need to be a P12 to do that. And this guy's only a P10.
Yeah.
And it's a good thing. In my notes here, before it was even revealed, I wrote, good thing there's no history of multiple personalities being psychically implanted and being stronger in this show. Nope, never happened.
Ah, okay, yeah. I was wondering, because when they come to that realization later, he seems very nonplussed about it. Like, oh yeah, multiple personalities. I'm like, this isn't a big thing. Okay, I guess this happened before.
Yeah, it's reference to things that have happened. And, you know, I think some of these things that have happened and are referenced are not supposed to be public knowledge, right? And it's not just that, oh, you know, a telepath could have some sort of schizophrenic disorder that gives them multiple personalities. Like, we're doing that to telepaths. So
interesting.
We don't want, you know, he's trying to cover something up. He is obfuscating to Franklin.
Yeah, Franklin suggests to Bester and the children of the Psycorn that maybe they got it wrong, and he's just outright refuses.
Yeah.
So he gives everyone their assignments to follow up on. Lauren is going to go back to their room and call the home office.
Yeah.
Bester is going to go to Space TSA and check the logs. And Chen Red Shirt Hikaru is going to go looking for the murderer by himself.
Yeah. He goes to the casino and the bartender refuses to serve him, but he's going to tell him a bunch of stories.
Like, super oversharing bartender here. Like, is this a regular guy, this bartender?
Nope. Okay. Never seen him before.
So as an actor who's like, I'm going to make the most out of my scene. And I was amazed by how much he was saying. I'm like, all right, dude.
I wonder if he's on the way out, because I don't know any bartender that has this kind of time. Busy night.
Chen IDs our guy and starts creeping, but another guy does the stabbing. And we know that this is Bryce, who, if we paid attention to the opening credits, is played by Vince Ricotta, who I mentioned not because you should know his acting career, but because his last name is Cheese.
That's this wonderful.
Important information.
There was a whole moment where Beth was on the couch playing Stardew Valley on her Switch while I was taking notes for this episode. And she's all like, that guy's name was Ricotta. And IMDb him, and it's Riata, right? And I'm all like, oh, you thought you saw Cheese. Ha ha ha. And then I find out he actually changed his name as an acting credit, and it was Ricotta. So I am publicly and openly eating my shit sandwich for
That's wonderful. Well, at least you know your shit sandwich has cheese on it.
Yeah, so Ricotta stabs Hikaru while he's trying to call Bester and get him in on there.
So I wanted to say before, and feel free to delete this, but before this scene, the two interns go into a room, right? Like he hacks into a room.
Yeah.
And I thought he got killed in the room. Like he falls down next to a dead person. And I was like, oh, he's right. Dead. But then he's in the next scene and then gets stabbed.
They're faking you out. Yeah.
Yeah. Do we know what happened in that room then? Like he fell to the ground and like seemed
he passed out. He's just green.
Yeah.
That's the unspoken joke is so we've seen this guy rip someone's mind before.
Yeah.
And they've gone out of their way to say that not even a P12, which we know in the lore, if these are Psy-Cop interns, they're P12s, is safe from. And so we are to suspect that this dude just gets mind shredded instantly and that's why he collapses. And so when we see him awake in the next scene, we find out, oh, haha, he's just green. He saw a dead body and passed out.
And I missed that. I totally was just like, why is he still alive? Okay. Gotcha.
Yep.
So then when he's stabbed.
For like another 2 minutes. Yeah.
Gotcha. Okay. Gotcha. Okay.
Bester and Lauren are discussing this and Buster runs up to the point so quickly that he goes right past it until they watch the video of the dorm room. And we get the explanation that it's that fake 90s schizophrenia that we love.
Mm. Yeah.
I will give this the sci-fi benefit of the doubt and say if you're psychic, maybe it is actually fake 90s schizophrenia is a real thing then, instead of the multiple personality disorder as commonly portrayed in media, which is not real at all.
Yeah. I did kind of get like, this isn't a very sympathetic portrayal of like schizophrenia, but it was the 90s when they still don't do it, but
you're not wrong. It's a trope. I mean,
you're
not wrong. Like as someone growing up in the 80s and 90s, being that kind of schizophrenic was on the same level of fears that I legitimately had as falling in quicksand, and like a lot of things that I was told were going to be a thing that didn't end up being a thing.
They find them. They run in. There's a firefight. Bester jumps in front of a bullet to save Laura. Harris breaks into a childlike mind here. And both Harris and Bryce get taken into custody. We do see Bester is shot in the shoulder. Franklin looks him over in Med Lab and reminds everyone he's not a racist. Zach is, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Zach is very obviously, yes.
Can I ask? So, Bester. I said Beskar, like Beskar armor. Bester. Yeah. Is he known for making like terrible jokes? Is that like part of his thing? Because like he's talking to the doctor and they're like talking about, I don't remember what they are, but then he goes, game, set, match. And I'm like, what is that? What do you? And like earlier he made like a weird Napoleon joke. And I'm like, is this just part of his character where he just says really awkward jokes that aren't jokes
in
at times?
Club.
Is that a thing?
Yeah. In book club, he basically puts on a humor mask to pretend he is human at some point.
Okay. That makes a lot of sense. All right.
Yeah.
So Bester as a character, one of the reasons why he is the way he is, and this is a thing that's like established in the lore a handful of times and fleshed out in the books, is sometimes a telepath has to enter someone's mind as they are dying.
Yeah.
And when you are present in someone's mind as they pass away, it is lore, I guess. A piece of you goes with them is what is said.
It's traumatic. It's damaging.
Yeah. At the very least, it's trauma for sure to have a pseudo firsthand experience of death. You know, like that sucks.
Yeah.
It fucks with you. It has to. Bester has the record, like the Guinness World Record of telepath who has been in the most minds while they've been dying.
Oh, God. Okay.
Part of it is his job as a psychop and like, who murdered you? As you're dying, I read your mind. But part of it is also he's just obsessed with this moment.
Okay.
So.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, he goes through a divorce, I think, and becomes obsessed with death during the divorce, which is sounds totally normal and healthy.
Everyone has their coping mechanisms.
They do. It definitely explains a lot about his demeanor. Like, it really does. Like, yeah. Not having known that, I just thought was, you know, Walter Koenig just phoning it in. But
no,
like, he's playing kind of a almost soulless, pretty dark dude, it seems like. So, yeah.
Yeah. So after this, they take the two into custody. Our psychop and intern head back on their transport. And Lauren has not given up the pick-me behavior, as she offers a back rub and to space a mundane to please Bestard credits.
Okay, so two things here. Sorry, because I just had to. I mean, the back rub thing, like, in my notes, I wrote back rub with, like, 15 question marks, because that's horrible. But after that, I literally said, WTF happened at the end. What? So can you explain what happens?
Yes. So Psycor,
yeah,
does not give a shit about non-psychic people.
Mundanes.
Mm-hmm. Mundanes.
Yes. Okay.
Yeah. Bester is actively preparing for a war where the psychic humans will genocide the non-psychic humans.
Okay, okay.
Mm-hmm.
And so anything that would draw any negative attention to the Psycor gets swept away.
Okay.
So this psychic dude can stay because he's another soldier for the army.
Mm-hmm.
He's part of the family.
Yeah.
But the human dude is not worth anything. So rather than explain why they disappeared him when they get him back to Earth, they're just doing it here.
So is he one of, so when they're in this vehicle, there's two people behind them, the prisoners, mm-hmm. right?
Yes. Yeah.
Is the person that she jettisons by taking off her seatbelt somehow, is that one of those people?
Yeah. So she jettisons Bryce.
Oh,
Okada.
Yeah.
The human with the hand tattoo.
How did she do that? Like, they just taking
there's
off
no
her seatbelt.
There's no artificial gravity. Ships have to be very large and rotate to have artificial gravity in Babylon 5 or be alien. So Earth ships don't have artificial gravity. So he was weightless. She was weightless. She undoes her seatbelt, floats up, drags him over to the airlock, throws him and pushes the button.
We don't see it because they didn't have
the special effects budget for weightlessness.
Yeah.
Okay. She unbuckles her seatbelt and then you see a guy floating outside. And I was like, what just happened?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's what they're getting at. And, you know, she just like unbuckles him and opens the sunroof or whatever and just.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Bye.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Yes, I did skip us past the back rub. So if you would like to get back into discussing in detail the idea.
The back rub is wild. And then we just up the ante with her going like, hey, daddy, what if I kill this guy for you? Yeah. Please, daddy. It's just awful. It's gross. It's horrible.
Yeah.
And we're done. End of episode. Yeah.
We got there.
Yeah.
All right. Well, as is our custom, Jeremy, we rate this every episode on a scale of Babylon's 1 to Babylon 5.
Right.
There being 5 Babylon stations of varying destructions.
Yep,
and then the last best hope for peace.
Mm-hmm.
Gotcha. Okay.
And the other Yeah, that's fine. You don't even worry about Babylon 4. I'm not going to say anything. You just watch the show.
Yeah.
Okay. So Babylon 5 is the best, clearly. And
yes.
Babylon 1 is bad.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. Going in without any context at all, it's really hard to, because a lot of the things that I came out of it thinking, I have since been disabused of. Like I said, I came away from it thinking, why was Walter Koenig's character, who's clearly the star of Babylon 5, why is he so personalityless? And I thought it was just bad directing and bad acting, but actually it was good directing and good acting. And so it really kind of, it makes it difficult for me to judge. And I will also, you know, I'll ignore the effects. As I mentioned, they look like Star Fox 64,
mm-hmm.
but that's fine. I guess it was a good, I give it a Babylon 3, I think.
Okay. That's nice and average.
I was engaged during the whole thing.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So, yeah. If you had asked me when we started recording, I would have said a 2, and now I'm saying a 3.
Yeah. Okay. What about you, Jafar? Okay. Tell me about your rating.
I am coming the exact opposite way.
Okay.
I think upon original viewing, this episode is a 4. And I think that the way that they show specifically Lauren's behavior as a like way of dedication to the Psi-Corps was probably passably acceptable 30 years ago. And now is just skeezy and disgusting.
It is.
And so that loses points with me. So while Jeremy started at a 2 and went up, I'm going to start at a 4 and go down to, I'll say 3.5, just because this is season 5 and it's been a rough stretch. But yeah, I think I remember this episode being better than I feel it is today.
Yeah. Yeah. Speaking of that how this wouldn't play today, I think that what makes it especially irritating for me is that it is kind of played as very normal. And it's only in a subtext that it's like, this is not healthy, right? It's something that was a little too normalized at that time, I think. And that makes it icky, extra icky for me. And it does kind of take away a little bit feeling this kind of ick from what we're getting is so much more lore about Psi-Corps that Javert and I have had because we've been doing book club. It's some of it's only really been hinted at in the show. And so we're fleshing some of these things out. And that is always new and exciting where you get more lore in your show.
Right.
But it was a little distracting when we have this weird, icky relationship thing being played.
See, and to me, it's because I now understand that these are the villains, that ickiness, as Jafir said, like that's the propaganda part of it. Like, I hate it. I hate seeing it. It grossed me out. But also, it makes sense from a in-universe setting that that's what would happen, right? So, yeah, it is. It's an interesting push and pull kind of emotionally, you know?
Yeah, so I think I'm with you guys. I'm in the 3 territory. Like, there are really enjoyable things in it and things that you were maybe craving a little bit after we get into the back half of season 5. Some of it I'm not craving at all.
Yeah. I'll say just as one more kind of thing about her, about Lauren, is that I found her super compelling this episode. Like, she had a willingness to kind of smile and laugh about things that were dark that I found to be really an interesting acting choice. And then learning that they're the bad guys is like, wow. Like, she kind of brought some subtlety to the role that I was like, I actually ended this episode saying, I hope she's in more of this, but I guess she's not.
No.
Yeah.
Nope.
Because she was my favorite character of the episode, I think. So
we might see her in book club, book 3 of Psi-Corps, because in timeline wise, she would be a character, be able to be a character in that. But we haven't gotten there yet. All right. Well, with all that, we've got next episode. Next week, we'll be talking season 5, episode 14, Meditations on the Abyss. Veer learns he's the new Centauri ambassador to Babylon 5. Lanier travels to the Centauri border for evidence linking them to attacking on the shipping lines. Sheridan attempts to preserve peace among the agitated Alliance members.
We're still stuck with that, huh?
Yep.
Feel like he's been doing that for a few episodes now.
Sure has.
Yeah.
But hey, Veer.
Yeah, we love Veer. I can't wait.
Yeah. Just like I can't wait to say thank you in person. Jeremy. Hey.
Hey.
Thank you so much. Like, really, truly, thank you so much for putting together our theme music. It's a very important part of our show. It's something I never take for granted, and I appreciate you applying your trade and your skill and your time and giving us a piece of art that we can use for our podcasting and our art, and understanding that we're all just poor artists and being really chill about everything, and just appreciate the hell out of it. Thank you so much, man. Thank you.
Oh yeah, no, absolutely. I was thrilled to do it. I love, you know, I love that it is, I think it fits the show, and I'm really happy that it is such a part of what you guys do.
I did want to ask you.
We got you on the line.
Yeah. How did you come up with the theme? What was your process?
I listened to different recordings of, because there's multiple Babylon 5 theme songs.
Yeah.
So I listened to several, maybe all of them. Got an idea for the basic musical elements that seem to be in a lot of them. There's, you know, it's a lot of the music is more urgent and intent laden than like a Star Trek theme where it tends to be big horns and chords. And so I wanted to kind of capture that with, you know, the theme that I did, there's a lot of strings going, like there's a lot of urgency in it. And, you know, and then to have the big brassy fanfare like that, that was just kind of, I wanted to capture without copying, you know, kind of the essence of what I was hearing stick out in the Babylon 5 themes.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd say season 5 is the most different and the least urgent theme.
Yeah. I definitely noticed that. I also, you know, it's funny because you bring up the music. I did want to say that the music during the episode was so chill. It was almost like Vangelis in Blade Runner. Like there were times where it was like, I was like, I would actually listen to this just like in the background while doing dishes. Like it was kind of, I mean, you know, it was definitely 90s synthy, but like not in a bad way. I kind of enjoyed a lot of the episode music.
There is a ton.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the choices in this episode were made to kind of unsettle you a little bit.
Yeah.
With that, just like Psycor is so chill and zen and nothing can bother us. And it is very creepy.
I definitely got, I got that vibe. And it was really, I was very surprised by it.
There are a bunch of like episodes that had their soundtrack released as CDs.
Yeah. I could see that. Yeah.
Show. Yeah.
Yeah, there was literally a time where they were doing an external pan from one building to another, and I thought I heard like the digital wind chimes that you hear in Vangelis' Blade Runner. Mm-hmm. Like it was like almost, I was like, did they actually sample it? It sounded exactly like it. It was really cool.
One other thing, well, we got you on the line. Mm. So Battlestar Galactica.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I'm just gonna plant that seed right now.
Okay. And are we talking OG or new?
New. 2004.
Okay. I watched all of that. And yeah.
Okay. So, and we will be watching it starting in November, December. So
I might have some musical ideas that I could potentially maybe put together.
That's very exciting.
Yeah. I would love to.
We'll talk.
Yes,
we'll talk.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I still have to. Maybe I shouldn't reveal this, but as of right now, I still need to record the theme music for Post-Apocalypse Now. So
that's all right. We'll get to it.
I have lots of good ideas for it, so it will happen.
And we're going to need to talk to Angry Duck Time Machine on Instagram about some new podcast artwork. Thank you for our podcast artwork.
Hey, Aaron, thanks for editing our podcast and making us sound coherent, in control. You know, we obey the rules of podcasting. Really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you for pitching my voice down at least three degrees. I really appreciate that.
Hey, and thank you to you, the listener, for being here with us for almost an hour and a half now. Look at us. We just had too much fun. We couldn't stop ourselves this episode.
Yeah, and I want to say thank you to both of you, not only for literally releasing a podcast about a show that I know nothing about and making it interesting to listen to, and for having me. Like this, I was so excited to be asked to come on here. So thanks a lot, guys.
It was so much fun.
Happy
thank
to
you.
Have you.
Yeah.
Well, we'll see you next week, Internet.
Bye.